to take what you've been doing further?
I think one feature avenue for the deglaciation is to now take our best climate models and try to simulate these changes, because it is possible that we can try to understand how sensitive the climate is by looking at these benchmarks in the past.
Okay, let's leave it there. From Britain, our patient guest has been scientist Thomas J. Boska. He's doing research into past ice ages at Cambridge University. He's the lead author of a paper titled Carbon Isotopes Characterize Rapid Changes in Atmospheric Carbon Dioxide During the Last Deglaciation. Find links for this paper and this discussion in my show blog at ecoshock.info. I'm Alex, ecoshock.org. Thank you for listening again this week.
And thank you, Radio EcoShock, for sharing that program with us and with all of you listening to KBOO Portland. It's 10 a.m. Coming up, it's a full hour of Flashpoints right after this.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor Climate Change Tools for Faith Communities, a workshop led by Tim DeChristopher, Saturday, April 9th, starting at 10 a.m. at the First Unitarian Church in Portland. During this day-long workshop, Sewell Lecture Speaker Tim DeChristopher will share integrated and multi-faith strategies to prevent climate change and environmental injustice, combat poverty, and restore dignity to both people and the planet. Again, that's a Climate Change Tools for Faith Communities, a workshop led by Tim DeChristopher, Saturday, April 9th at 10 a.m. at the First Unitarian Church, 1211 Southwest Main Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
On Progressive Spirits, I welcome back Bart Ehrman to talk about his new book, Jesus Before the Gospels, How the Earliest Christians Remembered, Changed, and Invented Their Stories of the Savior.
They remember Jesus as the one who wants people to be successful and rich. And you have other people who are saying that Jesus was a complete anti-materialist. Those kinds of different memories go all the way back in early Christianity.
Weekly podcasts on kboo.fm/progressive spirit.
Flashpoints will take an in-depth look at the huge nuclear weapons buildup by the Obama administration as they continue to break the law and turn their back on legally binding nuclear non-proliferation treaties. And we'll feature an extended interview with 86-year-old Sister Megan Rice, who just served 2 years behind bars for breaking into a nuclear weapons facility in Oak Ridge and pouring her own blood on nuclear warheads. I'm Dennis Bernstein. All this straight ahead on Flashpoints. Stay tuned. In Berkeley, I'm Dennis Bernstein. You're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. We turn our attention today to the White House Nuclear Security Summit and the administration's support for what appears to be a massive buildup of a 21st century nuclear weapons arsenal. The Obama administration's focus on nuclear security is part of a so-called comprehensive nuclear policy presented by the president in Prague in 2009. In that speech, President Obama described a four-pronged agenda to pursue a world without nuclear weapons. That's what he said. He laid out new U.S. policies and initiatives toward nuclear disarmament, nuclear non-proliferation, nuclear security, and nuclear energy. Well, again, we're going to devote most of today's show to a deep examination of the nuclear weapons buildup that is championed by President Obama in the name somehow of arms reduction, it's hard to sort of see that, we'll evaluate some of the clear and present dangers of the policy. And later on, you're going to hear from an 86-year-old peace activist, a nun who has devoted her life to resisting this expanding nuclear weapons policy. Well, it is good to have you with us. Joining us to talk about this is Greg Mello. He's been on top of this for some time. He's the executive director of the Los Alamos Study Group, and he's a leading expert on nuclear weapons. Greg Mello, thanks for joining us on Flashpoints.
Thank you so much, Dennis.
Well, let's begin with, what is this nuclear security summit? What does it build to be? Help us understand what we're being told about that.
Yes. It's being billed as a kind of capstone of the Obama administration's non-proliferation and nuclear security efforts, more so in the area of nuclear terrorism and trying to corral loose nuclear material. There are something like 50 heads of state in town, and the White House will unveil, I haven't checked to see whether any of this has appeared yet, commitments that countries are expected to make, and they are trying to create some momentum going forward. I mean, that's the story, at least.
Now, you describe it as the summit as a spectacle designed to enhance the status and power of the United States using nuclear security as an issue or a foil. Now, you tell us what you mean by spectacle. Those are pretty strong words. Is that hyperbole, or what is this that you mean?
Well, the real work of nuclear security takes place bit by bit. I think Laura Holgate, the White House person on this, used the phrase of the success of incremental progress, I think is the phrase she used. That's a good phrase. It's accurate. Although it's basically 2 days is not enough to accomplish anything. It will have it'll be long on pomp and short on substance. The administration has brought so much baggage to the table, and there are so many contradictions that won't be discussed, that it's not a kind of open, frank discussion of all the issues. The issues are framed within the foreign policy agenda of the United States. So you know, Iran is a potential proliferation problem, but Brazil is not. Even though both enrich uranium. South Africa is somewhat intermediate. They insist on their right to, which I think is correct under law, to enrich uranium to whatever percent they want. So the application of these principles is, you know, it varies depending on whether you're an ally of the United States or not. And the way that these ideas are applied to states depends on what kind of commercial deals are on the table, and where the country sits in U.S. geopolitical ambitions.
Now, do you describe what's going on in terms of U.S. plans, U.S. nuclear plans? Do you see this as a part of disarmament, or is this a dangerous buildup creating a new generation of weapons that generals sort of appear a little bit more willing to use?
Well, all those issues are very specifically off the table in this discussion. So some of the greatest nuclear security dangers won't come up. Most of the nuclear weapons in the world are held by the United States and Russia. The Obama administration has so severely alienated Russia that they aren't coming. They were not allowed to take part in any of the preliminary drafting of documents, and basically they feel like I read what spokespersons in Russia have said, and reading between the lines, why should we go when our role is to get kicked around once we're over there? So and the Obama administration hasn't been cooperative, and we disagree on major issues. So until we start, you know, talking privately, let's not talk publicly. So, you know, I'm kind of sympathetic with that.
What do we know about, again, that question of, are we in the middle of a major buildup?
Yes, I left that on the table. I'm sorry. Yes, we certainly are. The greatest buildup since Reagan. The Obama administration has launched a modernization plan for every U.S. nuclear weapons system, and it was expected to cost in excess of $1 trillion. We just learned this week that in an excellent column by Kingston Reef at the Arms Control Association, that the default plan of the Air Force for ICBMs is now to have mobile ICBMs, a plan that was rejected after considerable protest during the Reagan administration. But now that is the Obama administration plan. With more than $1 trillion in modernization and operational costs ahead of us over the next 30 years, as one administration official said to us in February, I feel like I've been a complete failure. I went to work for the Global Zero president, and he's leaving office having started the greatest arms race in a generation.
Now, yeah, and again, this is incredibly important because of the state of the world and the touchstones you pointed out in terms of conflicts in the Ukraine and Syria. So, and you, the reason I'm delighted to have you with us, Greg Mello, working as the executive director of the Los Alamos Study Group, you have done a detailed review. That's why I asked you to set aside the hyperbole. I want to hear more about the specifics of the weapons buildups, why you're so sure this is a buildup. I want people to be clear that Barack Obama is doing this. And it's just say more about the details, because you've done the work there.
Sure. Well, so the present generation of submarines is to be replaced by another generation of submarines.
Nuclear submarines.
Nuclear submarines that will launch ballistic missiles. The new submarines will be at least as capable as the ones that came before. The missiles are, for now, the same missiles. The warheads are being upgraded, and you can imagine, if you will, the electronic evolution that has taken place from the 70s and the 80s until today. So now you can have radar and fusing and celestial navigation improvements on these warheads that improve their accuracy to the point where, as MIT scientist emeritus Ted Postol puts it in kind of a rough manner, the one of the new warheads is worth about two of the old warheads in terms of attacking hard targets. They're much more accurate. Now, moving on, the ICBMs have been gradually upgraded all along. And as I mentioned, now the plan is to replace the whole works with mobile ICBMs. The gravity bombs, one large gravity bomb is being retired. The others are being consolidated into a very capable, highly accurate, multi-yield warhead with some earth-penetrating capability and yields that go down just to, accuracy that goes down to 30 meters. They will be delivered by stealth fighter bombers, such as F-35, which is adds another dimension to this weapon system. The basing is forward compared to what it was before. So all in all, we've got a more capable weapon system there. Probably the most destabilizing of the lot is the proposal to build more than 1,000 nuclear-tipped stealthy cruise missiles. These aren't counted under the New START treaty or any treaty. because that treaty just counts a bomber as one single nuclear weapon, no matter how many cruise missiles or bombs it carries. So in essence, this is kind of a breakout weapon for the United States. It is extremely expensive, which is to say impossible to defend against very stealthy cruise missiles. The Pentagon is delighted that this will impose enormous costs on Russia and China. I'm, you know, as you can imagine, greatly less delighted. So these are some of the concrete, and then I should mention the construction of warhead factories. The United States has an aging nuclear warhead infrastructure, and so there is a debate, which we've been a part of, as to what should be the capacity for producing new warheads. And tens of billions of dollars are earmarked for building factories here in New Mexico and in Oak Ridge, which we oppose.
Now, these buildups, this expansion of and 21st century buildup really goes along with what Reagan started out in terms of this concept of full dominance from air, land, sea, space. And we see this, if I've got this right, and please help me understand it, in the geopolitical sense, this goes along with what we now know is the U.S. Pacific pivot to sort of wrap a ring around China, to build huge bases, and to arm the countries. I guess Japan, the Japanese prime minister is in town now. I'm sure they're talking about this, to surround China and control what people are referring to next this century as the China century. You want to talk about that?
Sure. There's a way in which these nuclear